Welcome to Citizens Climate Radio. In this podcast, we highlight people's stories. We celebrate your successes, and together, we share strategies for talking about climate change. I'm your host, Peterson Toscano. Welcome to the third episode of Citizens Climate Radio, a project of Citizens Climate Education. This episode is airing on Monday, August 22nd, 2016. Today's show comes in three parts. First, we will explore people of faith and their climate witness. My guests include Rachel Lamb, an American with Young Evangelicals for Climate Action, and David Michael Tayungwa, a Catholic from Nigeria with the African Green Movement. In the second part of the show, we head into the art house. Through art and imagination, we will travel far into the future, like 150 years into the future. We hear a radio transmission that reveals the important role Christian missionaries will soon play in stirring up climate action. And finally, for our third part of the show, I will share your answers to the puzzler question, and you will hear a new Citizens Climate Puzzler for you to consider. You have no idea how much joy and encouragement I get whenever I receive your emails, voicemails, and texts. You can always reach me via email, radio@citizensclimate.org. That's radio@citizensclimate.org. Later in the show, I'll share the voicemail number where you can leave a message and also text me. Share your ideas for the show, answers to our puzzler, propose your own puzzler questions, tell me your feedback, comments, or just say hello. And with that, let's dive right into episode 3 of Citizens Climate Radio. When talking about climate change, what people have to say is important. We need to put a lot of thought and effort into our messages. In addition, we recognize that a good message is not always enough. You need the right messenger. According to climate communication expert George Marshall, people listen to messengers they trust, someone with whom they identify. This is particularly true when it comes to people of faith. When a faith leader weighs in on climate change, followers take notice and seriously consider the faith leader's words. In today's show, I chat with a Protestant in the USA and a Catholic in Nigeria. Both are passionate organizers who are spurring on their communities to climate action. Their backgrounds and their faiths have shaped their worldview. Their identities as Christians give them cachet among others who believe like they do. Meet Rachel Lamb. An American living in Maryland, Rachel, at age 26, is the national organizer and spokesperson for a group that specifically reaches out to evangelical Christian young adults.
Young Evangelicals for Climate Action acts as a space for people who are millennials, they're under 30, they identify as being an evangelical Christian, and are interested in connecting their faith and their faith-informed values with taking action on climate change.
In addition to connecting with evangelical young people, YECA seeks to influence adult faith leaders and lawmakers.
I think we've seen a lot of positive movement, particularly around Christian college campuses, where students are able to take a leadership role and change the institutional culture there. That also creates a space for other students who may be coming from a background where they don't really hear anything about climate, or what they do tends to be really negative. It provides a space for them to see their peers taking this seriously and their institution taking it seriously as well.
According to a 2011 Pew Research study, 2.18 billion people in the world identify as Christian. Among those, nearly 900 million identify as evangelical, Pentecostal, or charismatic Christians. Many of these live in the Americas and sub-Saharan Africa. Within their thought and practice, evangelical Christians have ways to connect to climate change.
They have everything that they need to take action on climate. They don't need something else in addition to it. having people like us who identify as young evangelicals can serve as sort of a cultural broker in that sense, because we identify as being part of the community, but we're also showing that we don't have to abandon our values to actually move forward.
Young evangelicals in the USA serve as cultural brokers. They start conversations about climate change. Additionally, the American Evangelical Church has an ongoing commitment to global development projects. As a result, they stand among their fellow American evangelicals as trusted eyewitnesses to the impacts of global warming.
When we look at climate impacts, we realize that climate disproportionately impacts people with more limited means to address those changes and might be already exacerbating situations where there is existing vulnerability. If evangelicals are motivated to care for their brothers and sisters because they are motivated for their love for God and their love for their neighbor, then taking care of our neighbor also means taking care of the land that they live on and recognizing that, you know, a lot of the major relief and development organizations, a lot of their work is going to be undermined or compromised because of changes in climate.
Todd Johnson, director of the Center for the Study of Global Christianity at Gordon-Conwell Theological Seminary, studies foreign missionaries. In a 2010 study, he determined there were 400,000 missionaries abroad that year. 127,000 of them were from the USA. Brazil came in second place with 32,400 missionaries living abroad. In addition to the traditional work of preaching, teaching, and church planting, Christian missionaries take part in countless development projects and humanitarian efforts. These missionaries also regularly report back to their congregations at home and to their church leaders. They become eyewitnesses, not only to the impact of their own ministry, but the growing impacts on a rapidly warming planet.
This wasn't an example of missionaries per se, but something that our organization helped do was sponsor a trip for senior evangelical leaders to go to Malawi and be with the community and hear from them and hear what kind of changes they were experiencing. And then the challenge was, how are you going to communicate what you saw and what you heard back, you know, in your own communities? They're already trusted leaders, they're trusted voices, and they can communicate those intersections in a way that some of us can't.
Rachel and her fellow young evangelicals also challenge their peers and churches to listen to other eyewitnesses, the ones most affected who are already responding to climate change.
We also work with a Christian bilingual university in Eastern Congo and love to share the stories of our climate fellows there. Their institution actually just went 100% renewable with solar panels. They're providing electricity to people in their community. By doing that, they're also bearing witness to why, to show concern about the way that we're treating our planet, but also say that part of our care and concern for creation, as we're called to do as stewards, is making choices like this, like choosing to focus on renewable energy. In this case, they're fellow Christians, and we can kind of spur the American church to hear their story and think about how they can also change their lifestyles.
Faith communities can take on many roles in a time of climate change. Rachel Lamb and Young Evangelicals for Climate Action are taking on the role of prophet. In some ways, they warn of coming judgment, consequences from our pollution and the ways we have spoiled the land, poisoned the wells. They call their fellow believers to obedience to the basic teachings of Jesus, including loving one's neighbor in profound and meaningful ways. In a time of climate change with so much uncertainty, fear, guilt, and even anger, faith communities can offer comfort and hope.
I think hope is fundamentally important to our work. We call this a crisis because there are significant consequences to our actions. We are seeing loss of species. We're seeing people being detrimentally impacted. There's a lot to be very concerned about and a lot to appropriately grieve and lament about. Growing up in a little Baptist church, one of the things that I come back to over and again is the power of that community to tell a different narrative. For me, as a young person, it's not about abandoning the church because I think they're not doing enough or being too slow, but finding ways to continue to join my brothers and sisters here in America, but also around the world who are doing a lot to take the core elements of their faith and apply them in this new contemporary challenge.
Rachel's examples of eyewitnesses in Malawi and Eastern Congo inspired me to connect with a climate advocate on the African continent. Meet David Michael Taungwa. David Michael is 34 years old. He lives in Abuja, Nigeria. He keeps himself very busy. He is co-founder of the African Green Movement, and he is the CEO at Global Initiative for Food Security and Ecosystem Preservation. In addition, David Michael serves as Africa Regional Coordinator for Citizens Climate Lobby. I spoke with him via Skype. You will hear we had a tenuous digital connection that binged and popped. It actually took us a couple of tries. David Michael explained that reliable power is a constant problem.
I had to charge my phone overnight last night to make sure I speak with you today to be sure that my phone is charged enough. I cannot trust the power. It can go on anytime. It can go off and it takes weeks.
Fortunately for us, it stayed on. We spoke the day after David Michael gave a presentation to 100 Catholic youth in his city. His faith, his personal experience with climate change, and his passion to organize others to action inform his work.
Being a Catholic and with the Pope's message on Laudato Si, it just made everything very easy for me to understand from my environment, from the things I see around me, the changes I see around me, from the spiritual aspect of it. It was just very easy for me to get into climate action. Yeah.
He serves as an eyewitness to the impact climate change has already made in his lifetime.
So as a young child, I used to go to the farm, and then we had a little stream where I would go and fish. I left the village and came to the city, had my secondary school. I was always looking forward to going back to the village because I loved that natural environment, going to the river to swim, to catch fish and all that. And so after the secondary school, I had the opportunity to visit the village again. The stream that was very close to our farm was dried up. I actually did not understand why, but I felt so bad because I was part of me was missing, you know. I was just looking forward to going back to my swimming. And when I got there, it was dried up. I actually did not understand the reason until when I got into the university before I understood that climate was changing and that was one of the results.
I asked David Michael about how Nigeria is responding to climate change and his involvement with Citizens Climate Lobby. He has helped to organize 6 groups in 6 different African countries.
A lot is going on, but it's more talk. There's no political will. And so I saw Citizens Climate Lobby as like one of the best organizations that could make a change.
While climate denial has slowed action in the USA, David Michael explains that climate ignorance is a bigger challenge in Nigeria. He also says that rural communities are particularly hard hit because of their dependence on agriculture. And in the rural areas, it's women and girls who are most affected.
The women and the girls are the most vulnerable people. They do most of the work. They work on the farm, they go to fetch firewood, they go to get water and all that. There's a community we're working with. It is the responsibility of the women to provide firewood for the cooking. There is a lot of deforestation around there. These women have to travel 3-4 kilometers before they can get firewood. We try to introduce locally made energy cooking stove for them, and that has been very helpful. In fact, one of the women told us that before now, you spend 2-3 days to get enough firewood that will last them for a week. But with the energy cooking stove, if she goes for a day or two, it will last them for like a month. This also has given them some time to spend on their farms. The situation in Africa all over is the same. The women are most affected. The women and the girls are very, very, very vulnerable to the effect of climate change.
I live in the city of Sunbury in central Pennsylvania. It is nestled in beautiful Susquehanna Valley, dab smack in the middle of a floodplain. Climate models predict it will get hotter and wetter in my region, leading to more flooding and to crop failures. In 2011, Tropical Storm Lee devastated the northeast of the United States. Whole towns were flooded out, people displaced, property and crops destroyed. It was bad. But within less than 6 weeks, most of the worst damage to infrastructure and roads were repaired. Within 6 months, most visitors to our valley would never have known that the region had been flooded. Life went on as normal. Now, people lived with the trauma and the fears, but we had the resources to rebuild. Even so, rich countries like the USA are feeling the strain of perpetual disaster relief. Extreme weather is expensive. As you might imagine, countries in Africa may never fully recover from floods and droughts. People suffer. David Michael explains.
Africa is one of the continents that will be worst affected by the effects of climate change, and it is already happening. We don't have the infrastructure that, like the US and other countries have, to withstand the effect of climate change. We don't have the equipment that can assist in times of emergency, when flooding happens, when there is a disaster as a result of climate change. Then there is hunger. It is happening. It's either there's drought or there's too much rainfall that wipes away everything that was planted. So who feeds all these people, all this population? Most of us understand the dangers. We can see ahead the challenges that will come.
People of faith like David Michael Teungwa and Rachel Lamb use their insight to see the risks and dangers in the world today. They use their witness to educate, enlighten, and motivate their peers to feel and to act. Climate change raises moral, ethical, and practical questions. People of faith like David Michael and Rachel are just two of many, so many, who are connecting with fellow believers to become engaged, informed climate advocates. Their faith traditions already offer insights and frameworks to help people understand and respond. Oh, and in addition to the Bible, existing liturgy, and the Pope's recent statement concerning climate change, David Michael offers this addition.
We now have an 11th commandment. You know, we have 10 commandments, but now we have 11th commandment. Thou shalt not pollute the earth.
I'm glad I can share a little of Rachel and David Michael's stories with you. Learn more about Rachel and the work of Young Evangelicals for Climate Action by visiting yecaction.org. That's yecaction.org. Learn more about the African Green Movement by visiting facebook.com/African Green Movement. I'd love to hear how your own faith influences your climate action and your worldview. Feel free to email me, radio@citizensclimate.org. That's radio@citizensclimate.org. I am curious about your story. Now it is time for the Art House. Today I take you on a journey into the future. In our work to address climate change, one of the resources we need more of is imagination. This is particularly true when considering the future. Sure, it's easy to imagine gloom, doom, and a dystopian nightmare. But what about a hopeful future? Can we imagine what success will look like? As a performance artist, I challenged myself and created a series of monologues about the future. I imagine a short radio program airing in the year 2165. The host, a climate historian, looks back at all the amazing accomplishments of the climate generation. Yeah, that would be you and me. This is a celebration of our successes as if they already happened. Meet Timothy Meadows reporting live from the 22nd century, 150 years from now.
I am Timothy Meadows. It is Saturday, August 24th, 2165, and time for that day in climate history. As I study the amazing accomplishments of the climate generation, I discover unlikely players taking on new roles on a new planet. One such group of people were conservative and evangelical Christians in North America and Europe. For a short time, leaders and members of independent Bible churches, conservative Christian denominations, and non-denominational evangelical churches initially refused to believe that the world faced a serious climate crisis. Some argued, surely God is in control, so we need not worry. As part of their regular practice, these conservative churches financially supported missionaries, people from their churches who traveled to distant places in order to share their faith and to do good works. By early 2016, troubling reports from mission stations in many places, including the Philippines, Malawi, Guatemala, and Indonesia, reached the churches in North America and Europe. The missionaries shared eyewitness accounts of severe droughts, floods in places that never experienced flooding before, food shortages, women and children walking farther and farther for water, mass migrations, and political instability. These reports moved congregations to rethink their earlier attitudes about global warming. While they did not suddenly identify with the beliefs, practices, and values of the secular environmentalist movement, these traditional believers found a way into the crises through their long-term commitment to support their missionaries abroad and the people they served. They increased their giving to help communities far and wide. They also tapped into their political power. By the year 2020, they proved to be a powerful force in lobbying conservative Republican leaders. They demanded that aid be released to help nations adapt to the dangerous effects of climate change, and they began to speak out to a public needing moral direction. On this day, in 2165, we remember that day in climate history.
And before we end this third episode of Citizens Climate Radio, we have our monthly puzzler. Last month, I introduced you to Sven. He is someone you meet traveling, and you reveal you are concerned about climate change. Sven replies, "I could not agree more. In fact, I am doing so much to address global warming. I recycle, take shorter showers, ride my bike to work, and I've become a vegan. If we each would just do our own part, we will tackle this problem." I asked, "What do you think about Sven's response? Is he correct to assume that if enough people change their individual consumption habits, we will tackle this problem?" How would you answer Sven? Well, I received many excellent answers. Dr. Richard Bailey from the Citizens Climate Lobby chapter in Marin County, California, wrote in, quote, "Unfortunately, individual actions, which we all should be doing, are nowhere near enough to stop carbon emissions, and certainly not enough to remove carbon from the air so that levels drop to a point where the warming stops." Chris Weingart, a CCL volunteer from Richmond, Virginia, echoes this thought. Quote, "Sven has such good intentions. I would try to answer him gently, but I would explain that it's not enough and it will never be enough. We can beg our friends and relatives to act in defiance of the marketplace and live lives of sacrifice, but most will refuse, as they have for the past 40 years, ever since the oil shocks of the 1970s. Wouldn't it make more sense to change the rules of the marketplace so that good intentions and money would be on the same side of the fence? We call this carbon fee and dividend, and we are working to pass it as national legislation in 2017. End quote. Well, that is a bold statement and very exciting news. I also received some voicemails. Taking time out from her preparations for her epic bike tour across the USA, Mindy Aller of Minnesota left a message for Sven. Here's an excerpt.
"I see myself on the train on the way to start my bike ride across the country for climate action, and I've just shared with Sven that I'm biking 4,000 miles through 14 states doing conversations on climate solutions. I'd start by thanking him for his personal dedication and commitment to a better world for himself and others. And it sounds to me like personal responsibility is something he really values. Another way to take personal responsibility is by connecting with our elected officials and advocating for policies that will have an impact on a larger group of people. Putting the price on carbon will increase the cost of everything, and items with a higher carbon footprint will increase more than things with a lower carbon footprint, thus guiding more people to change their consumption habits, even if they're not as conscientious about it as Sven is.
Mindy, along with Ryan Hall, start their bike ride on August 27th in Seaside, Oregon, and plan to arrive in Washington, D.C. on November 13th. Find out more about their tour, visit their website, lowcarboncrossing.org. Finally, Sid Madison from New Jersey sent me an amazing detailed response in which he considers every possible twist and turn in the conversation with Sven. Now, in his answer, he shares a very useful quote from William Nordhaus, a leading climate economist.
Economics teaches us that it is unrealistic to hope that major reductions in emissions can be achieved by hope, trust, responsible citizenship, environmental ethics, or guilt alone. The only way to have major and durable effects is to raise the price of carbon emissions.
Like many of the answers I received, Sid also advocates for big answers to a big problem.
How do we alter the decision-making of the actors in the system to choose renewable energy sources? Like Nordhaus, I believe this requires a fee on fossil fuels. I would then introduce Sven to CCL's revenue neutral carbon fee and dividend proposal.
Thank you for these answers. Okay, are you ready for our new puzzler? You are speaking with someone who you think could be an effective climate advocate. This may be a lawmaker, a faith leader, or a friend. After sharing your passion and what you are doing to address climate change, the person you are talking to, let's call him Simon, shrugs and replies, "Yeah, but what difference does it make if we do something in our country when it's China that's doing most of the polluting?" Now, Simon's answer sounds to me like a very American reaction. If Simon does not live in the USA, he might instead ask, "Why on earth should we do anything when the USA has done much of the polluting and is still doing so little to act?" Now, in addition to Simon's actual question, "Why should my country do something when others do not?" what do you also hear in his words? What emotions, fears, and beliefs might his question reveal to you? How might you answer Simon's question while also addressing what is unsaid? Send me your answers, leave your name, contact info, and where you are from. Get back to me by September 15th, 2016. You can email your answers to radio@citizensclimate.org. That's radio@citizensclimate.org. You can also text me or leave a voicemail of 3 minutes or less at the following number, 570-483-8194, +1 if you're calling from outside of the USA. That number again, 570-483-8194. Thank you for listening to this third episode of Citizens Climate Radio. Be sure to share this show with your friends. Just look for Citizens Climate Lobby on iTunes, Podbean, and Stitcher Radio. We also have a Facebook group, facebook.com/groups/Citizens Climate Radio. The show is written and produced by me, Peter Santoscano. We had audio technical assistance from Chris Pellucci from MediaVolution. Other technical support from Ricky Bradley, social media assistance from Ashley Hunt Motorano and Steve Volt, moral support from Madeline Pera. Special thanks to Susan Flores Higgins and Joseph Robertson for connecting me with David Michael Taungwa. And thank you for listening. All the music we use on the show is licensed unless otherwise specified. Special music for the Art House segment includes one suite from the free 1920s collection on archive.org. Visit citizensclimatelobby.org/blog to see info about our puzzler and find links to our guest. That's citizensclimatelobby.org/blog. Now, an easy way to share the show with your friends on social media is to get a link to it over at ccl.podbean.com. On the right, you will see Citizens Climate Radio listed under categories. That web address, ccl.podbean.com. Bean, like refried bean. Citizens Climate Radio is a project of Citizens Climate Education. Thank you for being part of the conversation. I look forward to hearing from you.
As a Christian, when you find yourself in a very serene environment with trees and flowers and all that, you feel happy. You feel that you find that inner indescribable joy.